Well, good afternoon, everyone. And here we are a few days later. This is the 30th of October, 2020. And we are continuing now with the study of color. It's a very lengthy section that we've been going through, and there's still quite a bit to go. So this is program number 47 in Letters on Occult Meditation, page 230. And we're dealing with color in the microcosm and in the macrocosm. All right. So herein lies much of difficulty, owing to the process of constant mutation. There is this law of mutation, which is logical. It's not a random law by any means. And it allows different aspects to come into prominence at different times. And we see this especially in triangles, where one or other of the vertices revolves to a superior point on different occasions. So here is the first of 6 points. The color in the microcosm is subject to the following factors. One, the factor of the ray of the ego, which of course persists for a long time. It may change at some point. One change is probably the usual with ray 7 morphing into ray 1, ray 6 into ray 3 or 2, ray 5 into ray 1, but you would wonder with 7 and 5, why not to ray 3? And maybe under special dispensation it happens. Ray 4 to ray 3, but maybe more likely ray 2. So the factor of the ray of the ego, the factor of the ray of the personality, the factor of the point in evolution. And let me just make sure that, this is the one. I just want to make sure that you're seeing what I'm talking about, because on certain occasions I forget to change the screen. The factor of the point in evolution, and next, the one. Okay, those three, I guess. One hint may here be given. Now let me kind of bring this up just a bit, you know. And one hint may here be given. At a low point in evolution, the colors are largely based on the activity aspect. And we might say, just as the soul ray is based on the activity aspect, because we don't have, I think, what is it, page 570 or 574 or both, in the rays and initiations, the only soul rays that are possible in the beginning are 4, 5, 6, 7, the only personality rays possible, 4, 5, 6, 7, all in a way under the activity aspect. Later comes the work in the love or wisdom aspect, which has 3 effects. Okay. So later, And these effects, let's see here. so later the love and wisdom aspect, the dropping out of colors from the lower sheaths, which are the leftovers from the previous solar system. This involves the elimination of such hues as brown and gray. And I do wonder about the lurid green and loathsome purple. Well, maybe those are so much connected with the Black Lodge that they are not common, but the elimination of such colors as brown and gray. And when you look at lead beaters, drawings, well, he had someone else draw them, I guess, but he gave the instruction on the aura. We do see browns and grays, and they're not too pleasant to look at, you know, under some conditions. I'm remembering how the aura was shot through with gray when fear was being demonstrated. And I imagine the brown is to be eliminated as well. Okay, and the transformation of certain colors into those of the higher tone. That is, you know, when all this, when working with the love aspect, an effect of translucence or an underlying radiance or brilliance. This, I suppose, this is what can distinguish the higher colors from the lower, such that you would wonder whether the higher colors are related to the lower. So underlying radiance or brilliance, which is the result of the greater purity of the bodies and the dimensions of the ever-growing inner flame, which I suppose shows more and more as purification proceeds. Okay. So transmutation is one factor. And translucence is another factor. And a dropping out of leftovers is another factor. So all of this, you know, so we can really see that love purifies. This shows that love purifies much more so than intelligence, because there is wickedness accompanying high intelligence. Okay. Now let's see. We have here so far the factor of the ray of the ego, the factor of the ray of the personality, the factor of the point in evolution. Maybe this is number four, continuing, perhaps. The factor of the ray or rays which are manifested, passing out of manifestation or coming into manifestation. Well, usually four at a time, or because this is the fourth round, four are prominent. Right now, well, let's see, ray two is in, ray three is in, ray five is in, ray seven is coming in, ray six is passing out, ray one is not excessively represented because of the danger of it, and ray four is not yet in. At this time, though, in Cosmic Fire, if you look up the number 1924, 1924, you will see some kind of entry of the fourth ray, even back then, almost 100 years ago. even though 2025 is supposed to be the time when it begins to enter from its monadic aspect. So the factor of the ray or rays, which that are manifested, passing out of manifestation or coming into manifestation. I think turn to page 26 in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, and you'll see some of the report on rays coming in and out, and when they do. These rays necessarily affect the egos in incarnation. They cause a change of vibration somewhat, or a constant change of coloring and quality. Yeah, now that is interesting. So, you know, there's part of that mixing and blending and mutating that we've been talking about. It's such a kaleidoscopic process that, you know, how can we, at our present stage of following process, how can we keep track? If a man, for instance, is on the ray of science and comes under the influence of the incoming ray of harmony, the effect of his trend of thought, and consequently on the color he will be demonstrating, will be quite noticeable. You know, and we might say that instead of just orange, we may have a yellowish orange. So let's make a note of that. All these factors cause the blending and merging and mixing. After all, the ray, well, ray four is the ray of the mix, and humanity, in a way, is the kingdom of the mix coming under the fourth ray. All these factors cause the blending, merging, and mixing that is practically inextricably confusing to the man from the standpoint of the three worlds. So, for clarity, we must see from a higher point of view. And here is Master DK, who is no doubt an expert clairvoyant, telling us about the confusion we can expect to encounter. He says, you know, after kind of a double ellipse here, you wonder, you know, what is being written down and considered maybe unsuitable for publication. But we've been given so much anyway that we cannot pine over the loss of a few items that probably wouldn't do us much good anyway. I know some people fixate on things maybe that were not included in the books, and yet none of us can fulfill what has been included in the books so far. So it's kind of a greedy response to want everything that appears to have been omitted to be present, as if the most important things have been omitted, which is highly unlikely. He says, I appreciate your feeling that even these hints but lead apparently to greater confusion. But by constant application to the subject in hand, by frequent brooding and meditation on the colors, you know, let's say, as will be done in the new esoteric schools, and by an endeavor to attain their esoteric significance, which presently is one of the items or approaches to full knowledge, which is missing for most of us, and their microcosmic application will gradually appear as a thread that will lead the student out of his confusion into the clear light of perfect knowledge, a kind of kind of an example of Ariadne's thread, leading Theseus out of the maze of the Minotaur. And maybe it only takes one hint, you know, that really is solid, and one will be able to grasp that thread. It would be heartening to be able to do so. All right. Have, therefore, courage, a broad elasticity of view, and an ability to reserve opinion until further facts are demonstrated, and also an avoidance of dogmatic assertion. These will be your best guides in the early days of your search. And of course, you know, what are we but in the early days of our search, even now? 100. Yeah, I'm thinking about this book, and how carefully has it really been read in 100 years? Well, of course, it wasn't published 100 years ago, but it was received. I'm not sure of the date of the publication. I wonder if that would be possible to ascertain a little bit here. Let's see. Well, it looks like 1950. You know, this is like shortly. This is like shortly after Alice Bailey passed away, 1950, and renewed 1978, and then it would have to be renewed again in 2006, every 28 years, isn't it? So that's an important date there, 1950. And I'm wondering, might it not have appeared before that time? That would be a long time suspended if received 30 years before. Okay. So, going on, it says many have through meditation and a receptiveness to the higher teaching found their way out of the hall of learning into the hall of wisdom. And what do we have there but transference from petal 6 into petals 7, 8, 9 and beyond. You kind of wonder about the hall of life, and but maybe that's more for a time when the causal body has been destroyed. Many have through meditation and a receptiveness to the higher teaching found their way out of the hall of learning into the hall of wisdom. Well, you know, I do so wish, when I think back about my own education, I wish that things that I was truly interested in had been imparted to me. On the other hand, maybe one has to pass through many things that relate to the running of society before it's possible to know what one really wants to learn. I remember an experience, I think in fifth grade of grade school, where I was sitting in the back of the class and somehow my eyes were becoming nearsighted. And the teacher was writing out a fair amount of material on compound interest in a financial sense, in a mathematical sense. And not only could I not see there was something new, but I had not the slightest interest in the subject. And I'm just wondering about, you know, how much, I mean, I love mathematics in a different way, but I wonder how many of us are exposed in our early education to types of so-called education which are unsuited for our assimilation. There is no need for it at the time, and it would not be retained for a time when there was need. You know, you can imagine a 10 or 11 year old person learning about compound interest. Maybe, you know, later it would be useful, but it's just one example to me about how our education has to change and the abilities of the person really drawn forth, educare, to be drawn forth. Going on, only in the Hall of Wisdom can the esoteric interpretation of the colors be truly known. That hall is entered through the meditation which prepares the student for that initiation which opens to him the door. Well, even the first initiation is connected with the Hall of Wisdom. Therefore, hold fast to meditation and falter not in your purpose, in purpose. The old style of writing is there. We see that different ways of presenting English words developed with Alice Bailey and the Tibetan together. But in the beginning, he was writing in the form of English that he knew best. Falter not in purpose. Well, I would say that people who stick with the study of the Tibetan and some of the earlier books being written for initiates of the first degree are certainly entering, in a certain respect, the Hall of Wisdom. Even some disciples and aspirants can be considered within that blue hierarchical circle that that has been provided there in one of the diagrams. I think the Keith Bailey diagram where he made it blue, I think it's correct. We are entering that particular kingdom. Now, here we are, September 4th, 1920, and we're continuing the letter, this long letter. We have, okay, what does it say here? We have for discussion today something of real spiritual application in a practical sense. Much that I've imparted to you has provided food for thought and for speculation. You can tell I'm doing a lot of that here with you. It tends to the development of the higher mind, and by stimulation of imagination, it somewhat develops the intuition. So here is, he has to tell us when he's venturing into practicality, lest we overlook it. Much of this is in the nature of prophecy, he tells us. And of the holding forth of an ideal someday to be attained, only by pointing out the goal and by emphasizing that point will man be induced to make the necessary effort and thereby approximate in some measure the desired position. So, you know, this is all about the impartation of incentive. And, you know, by how much incentive are we driven at this time? We can ask ourselves, are we burning with a aspiration to understand and impart the knowledge of the ageless wisdom? Well, let's hope so. I'm sure some of us are, and all of us can be. But today we come down to practical living and the imposing upon the personality of a certain rate of rhythm. And we do this in the study of the third point upon the effect of color. Now, it's very easy to get lost in terms of the outlines that he here presents. You know, we could probably go back and find a way to catch the outline, but we'll just go on step by step. And then if you want to study it further, you can go back and make sure that you are up to snuff with the outlines. Okay. The third point upon the effect of color. And I wonder, though, you know, I'm a little bit interested. The effect of translucence, is that it? Or the factor of the point in evolution, is that it? Or is it an altogether different third point? So, study of the third point upon the effects of color on the bodies of the student, on the groups with which he is affiliated, and on his environment. Vehicles, his own, the group vehicle, and finally, the environment as a whole. Because color does have a profound effect, and when we really grasp hold of its healing potential, as we will fairly shortly, as it's one of the first methods to come into prominence, there will be big changes in how we are able to approach the issue of our health, the health of our groups, and the health of those kingdoms found within our environment. Our study of the third point upon the effects of color. The point I seek specially to emphasize is the life side and not the form side of color. Okay, I think that's a discrimination that is much needed. Because otherwise color can be, you know, very much a veil. Okay. As I wrote earlier, color is but the form assumed by force of some kind when that force is moving at a certain measure and when its action and movement is impeded or unimpeded by the material through which it plays. Well, there, I think we have a really technical definition of what color may be. Color is but the form assumed by force of some kind, and thus, using the color, we can access the causative force, assumed by force of some kind, when that force is moving at a certain measure, and when its action, because obviously then there are different measures, so thus there are different measures according to which the force can move. Okay. M-A-S-U-R-E-S, according to which. Okay. And when its action and movement is impeded or unimpeded by the material through which it plays. So different degrees of material impediment produce the registration of different colors. Well, that's quite a sentence, isn't it? And I don't think I've seen a sentence that is quite so specific about what color is. One more time. Color is but the form assumed by force of some kind when that force is moving at a certain measure, maybe connected with the different frequencies of the different hues in which that force appears. And when its action and movement is impeded or unimpeded by the material through which it what? Plays. So we might have a certain type of force passing through one type of material that will make the material appear to be of a certain color. Passing through a different type of material, the material will appear as yet a different color. And it is the same, or at least a different hue. It is the same force. Okay. So let's see here. The same force may pass through two different materials and make the materials appear of differing color. Well, you know, obviously you can spend your whole life as becoming an expert in this field of color just the way you can with sound. We just, I think, need what we might call an overview. So in this sentence lies the key to the solution of the problem as to the color differences on the higher planes and on the lower. So I'll use our friend the red because I just want to really point it out. The resistance of matter, well, let's see, different types of matter. Let's just say different types of matter put up different intensities of resistance or promotion. What did he call it? Either impediment or non-impediment. The resistance of matter to the downflow of force of life and its relative density or rarity accounts for much of color distinction. So here we're being delivered some very technical information, which is of value to really understanding the nature of color. The resistance of matter to the downflow of force or life and its relative density, that is the relative density of matter or rarity of matter, accounts for much of the color distinction. So maybe the heavier, more turgid hues will show up in the denser types of matter. And these more ethereal, translucent, radiant hues, and you would wonder, are they even the same as the colors with which we are familiar? They will show up in matter of much more rarefied density. One of the distinctions, he says, has necessarily a cosmic basis and is consequently difficult of apprehension by three-dimensional man in this, the fourth round. One of the distinctions between, one of the color distinctions, I'll just put that in. One of the color distinctions has necessarily a cosmic basis and is consequently difficult of apprehension by three-dimensional man, which is what we temporarily are, in this, the fourth round. But, okay, so, and he maybe is not going to elaborate on what that is. But the basic reason for the difference can be apprehended sufficiently to permit the pupil to realize the absolute necessity of steadily refining his vehicle so that the force may radiate through with greater facility. So the more refined we become in our vehicles, the more truly present in its original nature the force can be. And the density of the material does not produce a lower color and a blockage or an impediment to the force. So it's almost as if the denser colors suggest an impediment to the force which is flowing through them, and these translucent, maybe transparent, radiatory, luminous colors suggest that there is not much impediment to the presence of the force which is causing the color. It is therefore on the three lower planes a question of practical living and a bringing of all the three bodies under edict, rules of refinement. Those are unusual words. They seem to suggest an authority, a stream of will, a stream of law, really, coming from the inner ruler. Suggesting a stream of law coming from the determinations of the inner ruler. So, can we, bringing the three lower bodies under the edict, under edict rules of refinement, an unusual type of expression, but I think we get it. If we do those things that pollute our lower vehicles, we will not have the kind of force reception, energy reception, force reception, which otherwise we might, and the progress will be slower altogether. These forces in terms of spiritual development are not so much in terms of form and not so much in terms of form, demonstrate through the virtues, as you call them, through magnetism and through vitality and intelligence. You know, all the usual aspects of divinity. So we want to bring we want to bring the forces through and maybe using more refined colors can help us do so. At the same time, there will be a radiation of more refined colors from our energy system. Okay. So demonstrating as virtues. I think I'll just kind of emphasize that idea. Forces are radiating more authentically, the higher forces are, through our virtues, our strengths as built up over time and cultivated and practiced. To put it quite briefly, as the student builds a pure physical body and a refined etheric, as he develops the emotional virtues and as he coordinates and enlarges his mental body, he is continuously altering the rate of vibration and changing its rhythm, which change demonstrates to the eye of the clairvoyant as mutation of color. So he's certainly trying to make sure we understand. And he's saying it, you know, as a good teacher will, in many different ways. So let's see how we might do this. And right, as the student builds a pure physical body and a refined etheric body, I suppose, able to receive higher types of energies with ease, and as he develops emotional virtues, I suppose, based particularly on the love and magnetism vibration and on the casting out of fear and cast out all fear, all hate, all greed, it tells us in a treatise on cosmic fire, page 473 or so to 475 or 6, as he enlarges his mental body, and certainly study with DK helps us with that task tremendously, he is continuously altering his rate of vibration and changing his rhythm, which change demonstrates to the eye of the clairvoyant as mutation in color. So I guess we're saying the purification relates to the law of mutation and brings about positive changes in relation to that law. As you have been taught, the colors as seen in the aura of a savage, you know, this is no longer politically correct language, but okay. Actually, the word interestingly, I think it goes back to Rousseau, maybe a sauvage. It's kind of the wisdom of the people of nature who have not been corrupted by civilization. So maybe the original meaning was different than the connotation now. As you have been taught, the colors as seen in the aura of a savage and in those of the average developed man are extraordinarily dissimilar. You know, and maybe red is likely to be one of those kinds of colors indicating in one way brutality and in another way courage. Fortitude, you know. Why? Why is this? Because one is moving or vibrating at a slower rate than the other, with greatly increased rapidity. So frequency, you know, rapidity of vibration determines quality. With the higher vibration having more elevated quality. One has a rhythm, slow, sluggish, and heavy, and we might call it tamasic, and the other is pulsating and moving with a tremendous velocity, permitting, consequently, a more rapid play of the material of which those bodies are constructed. So rajasic, and leading to more rapid evolution within the vehicle concerned. And of course, one day sattva takes over, and I imagine it'll be quite a beautiful thing, very rhythmic and very well patterned. So, therefore, I would like to point out that as the race progresses as a collective unit, those, capital T, who, capital W, gaze upon it from a higher plane are aware of the steady improvement in the color seen and of a greater purity and clarity of hue in the aura of the race, which aura is composed of the composite auras of the units of the race. The masters gaze upon, have a steady vision of the condition, color condition of the human race. And they can judge of changes for the better or worse by the purity of the colors. I suppose there's a lot less lying and machination when the colors are more radiant, translucent in hue, in their vitality, in their presentation, than when we have these heavy, dense, opaque colors. For instance, the aura of the Atlantean root race and that of the Aryan are widely diverse, and radically different. And, you know, there are many Atlanteans still within the human race, and at least in terms of consciousness, and sometimes both in consciousness and in racial form. But at the same time, the consciousness is the more important aspect. And we have, you know, high souls who have undertaken more ancient vehicles in order to bring some elevation of quality to the groups that are still using those vehicles, and from the point of view maybe of a lower consciousness. Okay, so we have therefore demonstrated the first point, that as the units evolve, the colors change, and this is brought about by the transmutation of what you term vices into virtues. A vice is dominance of an involutional quality of the same force, which at a later period will show forth as a virtue. So, you know, in a way, we have the possibility that every head of the Hydra can be turned around into a positive virtue, and wrong use can become right use. I have a kind of a little opera on Scorpio, which has its text, and there is in it the question of the development of the Hydra head into some virtue. But it is interesting, isn't it, that this definition of vice, a vice is dominance of an involutional quality of the same force, which at a later period will show forth as a virtue. So they definitely, vices and virtues are definitely related to the same force. And that gives us real hope of transmutation, doesn't it? Okay, so let's see. He's basically telling us that we've demonstrated our first point, and I'm trying to figure out where in the outline this first point is listed. Maybe if I go back here, I can find it. Well, this is the study of the third point. So somewhere here is point number one, the factor of the ray of the ego. Well, maybe not. All right, I'm just going to have to let that pass. And we can, my great fallibility here is that I lose my place in the outline when I'm doing things in this manner. So, you know, we can probably find that first point if we wish to. And the second point I seek to make is that these influences which show forth as colors, when they contact matter, move in their own ordered cycles. So there's something here about rhythm, isn't there? This is about rhythm, and maybe we can find our place in the outline. By looking for rhythm. Well, I've done a little search and, you know, come up with nothing. So, you know, rather than stop the progress of simply moving forward, I'm going to do that. And we can find, you know, first point, second point, and so forth when we examine the book later. Second point I seek to make, these influences, when they show forth, which show forth as colors, when they contact matter, it's so important because it's the degree of refinement of the matter which determines the hue or density of the color and its clarity, maybe, move in their own ordered cycles. So rhythm is implied. These cycles we describe as the coming in or the going out of a ray. And I'm just going to say EP1, page 26. There are other places, of course, as when it talks about the rapidity of the seventh ray cycle. It's not there, but at least the dates of coming in are present, and maybe for some of them, we might have the coming in and going out. So the coming in and going out of a ray. In this fourth round, usually forays are in flux at any one given time. And by this, I seek to impress upon you that though all rays manifest in the solar system at certain stages of manifestation, more or less of them will be dominating simultaneously. So the science of cycles is related to all knowledge, which is a power found upon the third subplane of the atomic plane. And the kind of information DK is giving us here is for those who are masters in a way and have therefore what's called all knowledge. In other words, it's for us, but we would be dependent upon him to impart the knowledge to us because we cannot access it yet ourselves. These rays, forces, or influences, now I'm beginning to see where we might be able to go with this. And it discusses the rays just up a little bit, you know, up a couple of pages. These rays, forces, influences, or coordinations of qualities when expressed in terms of light, color the matters they impinge upon with certain recognizable hues, and these give the tone to the life of the personality or ego. Well, he seems to be, you know, giving us something quite straightforward. They are recognized by you as the composite character and are seen by the clairvoyant as color. Okay. Now, maybe this time we would be able to find it. Although I hesitate really to go on a big hunt because usually that doesn't show up so well. Here it is. Maybe the factor, in other words, rays are mentioned here in point number two, and the ray of the ego is mentioned in point number one, the ray of the personality here. And also the effect upon the sheaths is mentioned as a point A, and on the bodies of the students and on the groups. Okay, but we haven't reached that point yet to discuss it. Okay. Sorry for these little pauses. So these rays, forces, or influences, or coordinations of qualities, when expressed in terms of light and color, as obviously they can be expressed in other ways, maybe in terms of sound, maybe in terms of vibration, color the matters they impinge upon with certain recognizable hues. And these give the tone to the life of the personality. So in a way, we've switched over to sound, a consideration of the relationship of color to sound or to the ego. So that takes us to point number one and point number two above. And maybe we don't have to get lost in every outline. Gosh. But, you know, in the future, this book will be studied under more regular academic circumstances, and we can keep the outlines clear. I sometimes feel like it's all preparation for the new esoteric schools, which are coming, and the first of which will be preparatory. groups, therefore, of units who converge through similarity of vibration will be seen as having approximately the same basic hue, though with many lesser differentiations in color and tone. And we might call these egoic groups, you know, and the old birds of a feather flocking together. So when we find ourselves in a particular egoic group, we will be probably sharing the same basic hue. Okay. And, you know, that will be one way, of course, that the master can identify the appropriateness of any unit for the group that he may be instructing. Okay. As stated before, the color of large masses of people can be gauged and judged. So this is color evaluation of those conditioned by the mass consciousness. It is in this way that the members of the hierarchy in whose hands is placed evolutionary development in the three worlds judge of the state of the stage attained and the progress made. In other words, at what point of development does humanity presently exist? So it's a rapid method of evaluation. And probably there are others. Large masses of people, yeah. Well, I'm sure that these days we would find a lot of the lower reds related to Mars. Since Mars rules the personality, we would find it in a state of rebellion, functioning as a kind of dweller on the threshold, a kind of rebellion against the solar angel or angel of the presence. And there's no way to get around that. You know, developmentally, there will be a stage of rebellion for the individual unit as well as for the larger group. And we're in the midst of it right now. And, you know, the question is, which will win? And we hope, obviously, that the angel of the presence wins this battle and sets forth a whole new rhythm of development and elevation of attainment. Different rays come in bearing units colored by that ray. It says other rags. Well, it's not, goodness, it's got to be rays, right? There are mistakes in the transfer to the CD-ROM. Other rays pass out, carrying with them units of a different basic hue. So all of this is visible to the master. These movements are visible to the master, and he sees the progress of the entering and the leaving. Well, right now we are going to have a lower color red leaving as it stands for Mars. Now, how much of the higher red standing for the first ray comes in is a question. Master Mori is one of those masters who his ashram, let's say, is appearing as one of the first five. And so the color red of a higher nature will be, I think, more present than in the past. And the change of the lower red to the higher red is really important. DK telling us that the sixth ray is much more destructive than the first ray because there's not so much wisdom and understanding. In the period of transition, the blending of color is of deep complexity, but of mutual helpfulness and benefit. Each ray imparts somewhat to the other rays in incarnation at the same time, and the rate of rhythm will be slightly affected. So, you know, as they say in slang, we rub off on each other. You know, we influence each other. Deep complexity. Now, what color could one put there to indicate the mixing and the blending and the influencing? You know, I'm not sure what I can possibly do there. So, I'll just put that purple in because it indicates something being done, something actually manifesting. So we are in a period of transition. There is complexification. There is, when a person, an individual is on loan to an ashram, which is not his home ashram, it's with the intent to come in and to influence with his own quality, those who have a different quality. And there, you know, Alice Bailey said of her husband, Foster Bailey, that she would have made many mistakes if it had not been for his advice. Well, he was a first-rate soul, and he saw things from that, a lawyer, I think, and saw the first-ray perspective and imparted that to the second-ray people. And as I've said before, the head of the Agni Yoga Society always felt, at least he told me, that he was rather related to Master K.H., even though he was attempting, I think successfully, to guide with wisdom the group of Agni Yoga students who presumably would be emphasizing the first ray. Each ray imparts somewhat to the other rays in incarnation at the same time and maybe affects the rhythm. Does it affect the cyclic incoming or departure? Because if they're in incarnation at the same time, well, maybe it's the departure that is affected, or the going out of incarnation. From the standpoint of the present and of time in the three worlds, may be almost inappreciably small, but through the frequent meeting and interplay of the forces and colors and their constant action and interaction upon each other will come a steady general leveling up and an approximation in vibration. So, you know, gradually we move from a condition in the beginning in which the rays, different rays, what does he say, hate and kill each other, something of that nature, to a mutual appreciation of each other and the utilization of skills found associated with rays other than one's own. So going on here, you will see, therefore, how synthesis is achieved at the end of a greater Mahamanvantara. The three rays absorb the seven, three above the seven, and lead eventually to emerging in the synthetic ray. How can we see that? Well, maybe in one of the diagrams. Let's try this. The three rays, let's see if we go back here a bit, we will see three above the seven. And then finally, the indigo ray will absorb. Now, with Neptune, we have the truest blue in the planetary sense. Maybe for some reason, it's not a part of our solar system. That is difficult to fathom, but it is esoterically a second ray monad. And so maybe in this particular solar system, maybe Neptune is the final resolver, could be. And so, you know, this is the kind of Kabbalistic arrangement, three above the seven, and we have somehow the third ray. Well, let's see, the seven subsidiaries are divided into the three greater groupings on the logoic plane. I guess we would say that the absorption takes place on the logoic plane. There's still a few, you know, more than a few mysteries to work out there, at least for our types of minds. You will see, therefore, how synthesis is achieved. At the end of the greater Mahamanvantara, the three rays absorb. Now, this is going to be true in terms of sound and vibration and in terms of light. The synthesis will operate in all vibratory matters. And when we have vibration, light, sound, color, all of them are aspects of vibration, for sure. Okay. And then, you know, the morning stars will sing together, and it will be a great joyous conclusion of the solar sonata. We have, you know, symphonies and sonatas being composed by these master composers, whether it's Sanat Kumara and the planetary logos, or whether it's the solar logos. There is a musical key to all this. Now he changes to the microcosm. In the microcosm, the three rays of the monad, the ego, and the personality will likewise dominate and absorb the seven. And so maybe, you know, we have to look here for monad, soul, and personality, just as we do in the microcosm. Finally, it seems that it has to be the monad which absorbs everything. But anyway, monad, ego, and personality will likewise dominate and absorb the seven, and in time also lead to emerging in the synthetic ray of the monad. The correspondence, in this case, will be found to be perfect. So we're on our way to that type of synthetic absorption. And accordingly, one of the three great monadic types will be the final absorber for us microcosmically. Right now, we're still working from the first third into the second third. We're working in ourselves into the ego, into the individuality, from a rather low position, immersed redemptively in the dense physical body of the solar logos. That's where we are right now. We're in that dense physical body, and we're trying to work ourselves into the place where the principles of this second major solar system are really influential. These forces or virtues kind of reminds one of angels. Some of them are called virtues or influences. I reiterate synonymous terms because the need of clear thinking on your part, are gradually received into the bodies of the personality with ever greater facility and further expression. So we're being built, what should we say, from above. Well, we're building below in our exercise of the qualities we have. We are also being built up from below, from above, by the influx of these virtues or influences, and built built from above and built up from below by the right exercise of the qualities we possess. Exercise. Okay. Virtues. As the bodies are refined, they provide better mediums for the incoming forces, and the quality of any particular force, or to reverse it, the force of any particular quality becomes more perfectly expressed. So here comes in the work of meditation. Well, refinement, coming from Shambhala, purification, i.e. purification, refinement, destruction, and organization. But purification, interestingly, in this second ray solar system is mentioned first because of the three qualities. Purification stands for the second ray, destruction for the first, and organization for the third ray and its subsidiaries, especially the seventh ray. So we are in the process of refinement. We can't give all of our attention to it because the very act of service itself carries with it a great refining power. Early in evolution, these forces played through and on the bodies of men with little understanding on his part and small ability to profit thereby. You know, more or less, what can we say, the green period. Green, of course, is Atma, but green is also lower nature. And people are very natural, conforming to the lower laws of nature quite unconsciously in the beginning. So we've all been through this, and I suppose we are spared seeing it until we can understand. But one day the movie will be shown, even though you may be alone in the movie house, just the way Kirk Douglas was in that very illuminating film recently called Illusion. Okay. But as time proceeds, he comprehends more and more the value of all that eventuates and seeks to profit by the sum of the qualities of his life. And herein comes opportunity. Saturn, the God of opportunity. And it's the second ray phase. At least the second ray is coming in more as he looks inclusively at what he has, what his powers may be, and seeks to develop them and express them. Saturn, of course, is not the second ray planet. It's a third ray planet, but people learn how to use Saturn quite well when they get into the second ray phase. In the intelligent apprehension of quality, in the striving after virtue, the higher sixth ray, striving, and in the building in of godlike attributes, attributes of the monad, comes response to these forces and a facilitating of their action. Well, these are, you know, we have so many injunctions about what we are to do. We simply have to stay in the presence of the master by studying his work and applying what little we can to the circumstances which exist. The student of meditation ponders on these forces or qualities. He seeks to extract their essence and to comprehend their spiritual significance. He broods on his own lack of response, just as the sounding of the note of the ego occurs before birth, so that we know what's missing and we can begin to fill it in with the help of the angel of the presence. He broods on his own lack of response. He realizes the deficiencies in his vehicle as a medium of those forces. He studies the rate of his rhythmic vibration, and he strenuously endeavors to bend every opportunity to meet the need. He concentrates on the virtue, and if he is so situated that he is aware of the incoming ray or ray or of the ray in dominance at that time, he avails himself of the hour of opportunity and cooperates with the force extant. All this he does through the ordered forms of the true and occult meditation, which gets back to the point of the whole book, doesn't it? I mean, this is an extraordinary book on the methods and virtues of occult meditation. It seems, well, of course, it leaves many stones unturned, but to people like ourselves, it seems like it doesn't. So this is building. This is the, you know, in the foregoing, the building of the causal body, egoic lotus, is given a method. Can we do all these things? Do we do all these things? Are we aware of these things? Or do we fall into the non-productive state of complaint, discontent, self-pity, you know, all those nice second ray counter virtues? We really have to see ourselves. We must see ourselves and with what is offered to us, avail ourselves of the constructive offering. Now, how about, I wouldn't mind spelling correctly here, you know? All right. And a little more, just a little more, not much. As time progresses, yes, again, I prophesy, occult students will be given certain facts anent the dominating rays, which will enable them to avail themselves of the opportunity any particular ray affords. And so these are the ambient rays and not the rays of his system or energy system. They are part of his spiritual environment. Well, DK knows when to fill in the knowledge we are missing. And we simply have to conform to opportunity. The four points, you know, inquire the way, obey the inner impulses of the soul. Right there, I'm sure many of us fail. I know I do. Pay no attention to the worldly wisdom of those who have the highest external reputation for wisdom, because it is worldly wisdom particularly and not the real wisdom in depth, and set an example. So sometimes the simplest things are the things by which we will really achieve. And if we don't exercise those, then we will not achieve. The opportunity for achievement at the present time is immense. It can't be an egotistical achievement. It cannot be a longing, ambitious longing for place and power, for reputation. You know, let him, he who serves is the first among you, you know. The first shall be last is another way of putting that. There are other interpretations. But this idea emerging today of servant leadership, some of my colleagues know more than I do about it, but that the true leader is the server and not the one who utilizes the system for egotistical gain. We see too much of that. It's a phase, you know, and once the fall comes in the middle of the fifth petal, a period of suffering ensues and the possibility of aspiration develops. If a person doesn't veer off onto the left-hand path and create a huge complication in time for himself or herself. You know, the brothers of darkness, says DK, are brothers of unique blindness. They just don't see the advantages of love. And they seek to continue to cultivate their intelligence and to manipulate according to that intelligence those upon whom they prey. P-R-E-Y. So this is a moment when the transition into the fifth kingdom is remarkably possible. And, you know, it's through the mercy, the benevolence of Sanat Kumara, the greatest example of the teaching ray upon our planet, and also called the great sacrifice, that we are being given this opportunity to make up for some kind of incredible loss in earlier cycles, where we've been held back due to our own willful ignorance, I suspect. I mean, ignorance is one thing, but willful ignorance is another. And when the brothers of darkness seek to prey upon humanity, ignorant humanity, it only makes the matter worse. Of course, at the same time, it may summon the resistive powers of human beings, and they may fight for their spiritual life and make more progress than otherwise they would. I'm reminded of a statement. I can't give the exact words, but the idea I can give that if not for the rigors, the strenuousness, the awful conditions of the Atlantean War, many who are now on the path of initiation, or who even entered then on the path of initiation, would not be treading it even now. So that's where Master Moria and his idea comes in. Obstacles are possibilities, and then this hard to understand statement that the worse the better, meaning that if we are really challenged, we may rise to the occasion and develop much more rapidly, as we should, given our past failures. We may develop much more rapidly the virtues which we need to truly progress and help others progress. It's an amazing universe, I'm sure, and it's only one of countless, without beginning and without end, which is a great paradox as well, because you kind of wonder how you can ever reach any point in a linear sequence if there is no beginning on the way to that point. But that's a more of a philosophical problem, and you know, here we are, we're here, and we're under certain circumstances. The whole question of simultaneity arises. Is everything happening at the same time, or is really nothing happening at all because the no thing is? But then I diverge off into the substance of another kind of course that I feel compelled to, I can't call it teach, but I feel compelled to offer it. So we're going to continue next time with the effect of color upon the environment. And it's a, you know, looks like a lengthy section, and then it will come to the application of color and healing. We really have until page 253 to go, and then we'll be discussing what the master is and what the ashram is, and all from the point of view of the Tibetans' first writings. And they have something in them of a very rigorous nature. The rigor is of value to us. And we have to develop a rigorous approach. It doesn't mean we're frozen in some kind of rigor mortis, you know, the stiffness of the dead, but we have to be firm in our principles regarding occultism or the hidden causes of things. And for those who are offered the opportunity, what a shame it would be if they do not accept this opportunity. They learn a lot the hard way along the way. I know I have. I know 50 years ago, I was applying to the Arcane School just about 50 years ago and studying for some years before that theosophy. And it seems like yesterday, this applying to the Arcane School, I remember first reading about training and discipleship offered at the, I think, back of the book. I'm not sure now, back or front of the book. And it seemed like such a unique idea, seemed like such a great opportunity. Well, that's almost half a century. And it's just a drop in the bucket, you know, and for some of us, it's a continuation of more haphazard efforts that we have made, perhaps in the past. But it takes a long time to study and achieve the effect, study and meditate and achieve the effect that, for instance, a Master DK has achieved. Centuries, millennia. You know, you can think of his condition when he was the major assistant to Pythagoras back in Asia Minor, back 2,500 years ago. And I'm sure that, you know, he knew at that time more than we know now. So we have our work cut out for us, but it's the cycle is winding up. The age is ending. The spiral is increasing in its rapidity. And the opportunity is great. So I'm just hoping that all of us can appreciate the nature of the opportunity being offered and continuing to be offered in this series of bridging treatises, of which the third is coming. And we know we have another 100 years to go before the true Aquarian age really is technically with us, the year 2117, as far as we do know. And that will be time, you know, time enough for the presentation of the third installment of these bridging treatises, and what we can anticipate. Well, what can we anticipate? We don't know. But we know that somehow it will complete the design that he has. And what we can offer to this generous master, very generous, unbelievably generous, is the effort to really assimilate what he has already given. I mean, you know, it's a banquet for the inner consciousness and the mind and for the capacity to serve, and to ignore it or to give less to it than otherwise we could is foolish. So let us somehow grasp the opportunity, seize the day, and then be ready to move with him as he develops and unfolds his next installment of teaching. And I'm sure that we will find that we are well repaid by having that kind of attitude, both in our own development and in our ability to serve and help others develop. All right. Though maybe not quite 2 hours here, and but it is a section, and we wish you all the best in your studies and meditation and in your application and service. So we'll continue next time. So what we have here, we're ending program 47, I think, 30th of October, where it's taken us to page 236. And we begin at 236. Next time with program number 48. Whenever we do this, whether it's October or November or later tonight or whatever, but we do have full moon tonight, so pre-full moon, so probably not tonight. And then we will undertake the study of the effects of color on the environment. Okay, friends, that's it. Lots of love, many blessings to all of you. And meditate deeply, study hard, and apply what you learn as best you can. Let's all give it a try. We'll talk to you soon. And bye for now.